Coming up in the show, Scotty Scheffler runs it back at Augusta National, winning his second Masters in commanding fashion. We're breaking down his four-shot victory and diving into how long the Scheffler era as a dominating world number one is going to last. And while we turn the page on the season's first major, we now set our sights on the Chevron Championship. LPGA Tour major season kicks off with Nelly Korda trying to do something truly historic. That's when her fifth straight start to kick off this young season. We're going to have a preview with everything to watch for as Golf Today starts right now.
Golf Today.
Well, he's done it again. 27-year-old Scotty Scheffler is now a newly minted two-time Masters champion. Oh, how sweet it is to have that green jacket slipped on a second time at Augusta National. The world number one now has 9 PGA Tour victories, all coming the past 3 seasons. The man is on an absolute tear, and we're going to be talking all about him these next couple hours here on Golf Today. I'm George Savarikas, pleased to welcome Jordan Cornett to the show. I know hoops junkies probably remember you from your time at Notre Dame and have called some college hoops with NBC Sports here. But Jordan, the golf junkie now, how are we getting you on Golf Today?
You know, I'm like all the other basketball players I know in my circle. We all fashion ourselves golfers. We watch a ton of Golf Channel. George, big fan of yours. It's nice to be able to become friends with you over this time. And now I have a chance to work with you. Very excited about it. And I cannot believe we're showing pictures of my playing days. If you could see my coach on the side, he'd be young. Get rid of the basketball.
Oh, there you go. You were the originator. The three
One of
fingers
the
up.
Few threes that I made in my career. So, yeah, I had a fun time playing basketball at Notre Dame. And love the game of golf. Love the opportunity to be here, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, when did you get the golf bug?
I got the golf bug. You know, I grew up in a golf family. Okay. So I played when I was younger, got away from it when I was playing collegiate basketball, was laser focused on that when I realized I wasn't going to be one of these guys in the NBA. Got back to golf in probably the last 10 years. So I fashioned myself a golfer, but beyond that, a family man like Scotty Scheffler, and we heard all about him and his love for his wife and his kids. And I'm not Scotty on a golf course, but I have that same belief in terms of family.
Yeah, very cool to see. Great to have you on the show with us here on Golf Today. And we're going to turn our attention now. Of course, we got to start with what we saw out of the world number one, Scotty Scheffler, a final round 68, and he was able to make that final margin 4. I mean, you look at that number, it seemed like it was effortless, but it was pretty close until that second 9 on Sunday. It's now his second Masters win, and get this, just his 5th career Masters start, and you see the youngest multiple Masters champions all time. Jack Nicklaus was just a tick over 25. Same story for Tiger Woods. Seve was just 26 when he won his second Masters in 1983. Scotty Scheffler at 27, now a 2-time Masters champion.
You say constantly that your identity is not in your golf scores. What is it about winning and competing then that you find satisfying?
You know, that's a really good question. I was sitting around with my buddies this morning. I was a bit overwhelmed because I told them, I was like, I wish that I didn't want to win as badly as I did, or as badly as I do. I think it would make the mornings easier. But I love winning. I hate losing. I really do. And when you're here in the biggest moments, when I'm sitting there with the lead on Sunday, I really, really want to win badly. And my buddies told me this morning, you know, my victory was secure on the cross. And that's a pretty special feeling, to know that I'm secure for forever. And it doesn't matter, you know, whether or not I win this tournament or if I lose this tournament, you know, my identity is secure for forever.
How much do you struggle with just the idea of discontentment, of needing, whether it's more wins, more money, more fame, to be satisfied? And when do you find yourself most content?
Gosh, that's a good question. I feel like playing professional golf is an endlessly not satisfying career. For instance, in my head, all I can think about right now is getting home. I'm not thinking about the tournament. I'm not thinking about the green jacket. I'm trying to answer your questions. I'm trying to get home. I wish I could soak this in a little bit more. Maybe I will tonight when I get home. But at the end of the day, I think that's what the human heart does. You always want more. And I think you got to fight those things and focus on what's good. Because, like I said, winning this golf tournament does not change my identity. My identity is secure, and I cannot emphasize that enough. I try not to think about the past or the future too much. I love trying to live in the present. I've had a really good start to the year, and I hope that I can continue on this path that I'm on. I'm going to continue to put in the work that's got me here. That's pretty much it. I'm just going to continue to put in the work, keep my head down. I like when I step up on the tee at a tournament, being able to tell myself that I did everything I could to play well, and the rest isn't up to me. And so when I step on the tee next week, I'm going to be thinking about the preparation, what it took to get there, and I'm going to go out and just try and play as freely as possible.
I feel like the two times we've had Scottie Scheffler as the Masters champion, he lets us kind of peek under the hood and really open up and share his thoughts and his mindset. A couple years ago when he won, he was saying the doubts that he had leading into the final round, was able to get the job done. Now we hear Scottie Scheffler saying that I almost want to win it too bad leading up to it, and the hours that I have to kill until I'm in competition are the toughest thing. It's the anticipation that he has. It's fascinating.
Yeah, but and George, you don't see it, though, when he's out there, when he's moving through the course. I mean, I'm watching this guy, and you watch other guys you could point to. I mean, you feel it with Rory. You feel it with Bryson. You feel these guys thinking a lot. You're watching Scott. He's out there just playing golf. And it doesn't feel like the moment bothers him. Look, this guy's got – he's as good with his irons as anybody on a tour. They weren't really there for him throughout the majority of the weekend and the tournament in Augusta. And yet he was still dominant. Like, he just finds a way – to do the things that are needed to win. And he always takes full advantage. When he takes that advantage, like he did on 9 with the wedge, where he almost held it for eagle, you knew it was over. They say that the Masters really begins on that back 9 on Sunday. It was over, it felt like, once you entered it with Scottie.
Yeah, he basically sucked up all the oxygen out of Augusta National with 9 holes to go, and it just seemed like an inevitable march until Scottie was winning. And the final question was, what the margin would be. But it's a unique set of circumstances. Scottie has 3 wins this season, a major. He's had this incredible 4-event stretch where he's won 3 times, had a runner-up. He might have to take a little bit of a break, obviously, with the first kid on the way. And then the curiosity will be what impact that has if he steps aside from the tour for 2-3 weeks, a month with the PGA Championship next month.
Yeah, and as a father myself, it's definitely not something that should be looked at as a negative for anybody as they look at the situation. I mean, it's an opportunity for him to be a father for the first time. When you hear Scottie talk about family, you can tell that's above everything, faith in his family. So that opportunity you're excited for him. But how does he handle this upcoming week? How does he handle the heritage? Is he right now he's in the field. Does he elect to stay in it if Meredith doesn't have the child? I think that looms large in kind of his approach to get to when he gets to Valhalla, an opportunity to play in another one of those majors and really shine, because let's say the baby comes after that. He's going to take... If he doesn't play in the Heritage, that's 3 weeks off. And then go try to step into a major. Playing at that level, I think in the immediate you might see some tapering off. But let's be very clear. This guy's, by a long shot, the best player in the world. He was paired with Rory the first 2 days of this tournament. He was 10 strokes better than him. Like, this is Rory McIlroy, who we know is kind of going through some turbulence. Mm-hmm. But who is close to Scottie Scheffler right now? Nobody.
And that's what's been such a strange start to the year, is that the top 10 or top 20, and Brandel Chamblee did such a good breakdown of this on Live from the Masters. There's been such poor form by so many of the big-name players that Wyndham Clark appeared to be arguably the closest guy in the Florida swing, and then he missed the cut. And it's been fascinating with Scottie Scheffler's career. He has 9 PGA Tour wins now, but they've come at 5 events because he's won 4 events 2 times. And you look at also just guys who have had these runs in recent memory. We're going to go back the last 15 years of 3+ majors in 3 calendar years. Scottie has 2. He's looking for number 3. Brooks Koepka won 4 from June of 17 to May of 19. Jordan Spieth won all his majors in a span of a little more than 2 years. Rory McIlroy won all 4 of his in a span of 3+ years. Padraig Harrington won all 3 of his in the span of just over a year. And so the question with Scottie going forward then, and this is, like I mentioned, the wins by event, and you see Scottie's won the Masters twice, the Players twice, WM Phoenix Open twice, Arnold Palmer Invitational twice. He would have won the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play likely twice if that event wasn't discontinued.
True.
So that's the only outlier that he's won once. The question with these guys when they have these runs, and I've sat on this desk so many times and talked about Jordan Spieth's run or Rory McIlroy's or Brooks Koepka's or Justin Thomas, is when you're in it, you never think there's going to be an end.
Yeah.
And with Scottie, his makeup from tee to green leads you to believe that if putting's his, quote, deficiency, and he can just get that to average by PGA Tour standards, it's hard to foresee a significant drop-off with the rest of his game where you think he could have an extended horizon like, say, Ernie Els won four majors over 18 years. Phil Mickelson won majors over a 17-year span. Tiger Woods won majors over a 22-year span. You would think with Scottie Scheffler, it could be a very long horizon until he really tapers off.
This guy hasn't played a round over par in the season. I mean, he spent 77 weeks finishing in the top 25 in every tournament he entered. What stood out to me, I think, the most, George, when you watch Scottie Scheffler, is the fact that he maybe played a B-minus game, maybe a C game. He's dominant. Like, I think that's the difference. And I also look at his mindset. I also look at, you know, people could talk about his footwork and how maybe it needs to be changed. And he's very confident in who he is and his approach and his swing and how he approaches it. He's not tinkering with anything. Like, this is who the guy is. There's no distraction that's going to come outside with the newfound fame of being the guy, the face of the tour. He's not impacted by that. This guy is built for the long run, and I think it's different than those other ones mentioned because it just feels more sturdy to me. And I can't find a weakness in his game like you may have with those others that were aforementioned in the graphic prior.
Yeah, and I mean, with Scottie Scheffler, it kind of feels like we're in the maybe third inning of where he's at with his ascent to greatness, and it could be a long cycle. I mean, he's 27 right now, so.
Who would you say is his next closest competitor right now? I know I'm being a prisoner of the moment. I'd say Oberg.
I wouldn't go Oberg yet because while he's had this amazing ascent inside the top 10, we haven't seen him win at a prolific rate. Yeah. So I would want to see Oberg. I think his next step is to have a season where he has a win or multiple wins to then say, okay, he's clearly the number two.
He's the same temperament.
No, he's wired the same way, yeah. And he's on a better trajectory than Scotty was when he first turned pro. I think he's part of a collection of five or six guys that can be that next wave to challenge Scotty.
Who would you say that guy is, though, now, George?
I don't think Wyndham Clark's too far off. He had one bad week in Augusta. But I would say of the guys who are in the top 10, he's probably been playing on the most consistent level so far this season. But there isn't anyone else with multiple wins. Yeah. He only has one. Scotty already has
three. And I think that speaks to why this run could be so dominant.
For sure.
Because there's a big taper off from the world's greatest golfer right now, the world's greatest golfer on the planet.
It's a massive drop off. But Ludvig Åberg, we saw the performance from the 24-year-old. And, I mean, it was impressive stuff. Started the week with an over par round. Then he had three straight rounds, 2, 3, and 4, all under par, including that final round 69 to finish the week at 7 under and become the first Masters runner-up in his debut appearance at Augusta National since old Will Zalatoris just a few years ago. Afterwards, Åberg on the week that was.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, everyone in my position, they're going to want to be major champions. They're going to be world number ones, and it's the same for me. That's nothing different, and it's been that way ever since I picked up a golf club, and then that hasn't changed. So I think I'm just, you know, this week solidifies that a lot of those things are there, and we just need to keep doing those things and put ourselves in the positions to win tournaments, I think.
Peter Hansen said out there that he can't wait to see you in Kentucky for the PGA. Do you feel differently maybe going into a PGA now after having this under your belt than you would have if you hadn't had this experience?
I think so. I mean, this being my first major championship, you never really know what it's going to be like until you're there and experience it. And I think this week has given me a lot of experiences and a lot of lessons learned in terms of those things. And it makes me really hungry, and it makes me want to do it again and again, I think.
A couple of your Ryder Cup teammates this week have suggested that you're a future world number one. It's obviously not an easy thing to achieve without that expectation, but how do you feel when people like Rory McIlroy or Shane Lowry say these things about you?
Well, it's very flattering. It's very nice of them to say those things. They don't have to say those things. But I think, you know, to me, it just tells me that we're doing some good things, me and my team, and we're probably not going to change a whole lot. But obviously hearing those things from Rory and those guys is very, very encouraging.
I want to give you more reason to buy the Oberg hype train, because his ascension is meteoric inside the top 10 in the world golf rankings. John Rahm was the recent gold standard. You remember when he turned pro after that decorated career at Arizona State? Took him a year to get inside the top 10. He was 551st in the world when he turned pro. And you see, after 10 starts as a pro, was 129th. After 22 total starts, he was all the way up to 9th. That took about a calendar year. Ludvig Åberg was just inside the top 1,000 in the world when he turned pro. Then you see, after 10 starts, was up to 91st. Just needed 20 starts to get inside the top 10. He is now 7th in the world rankings. It has just been an insane run from the young Swede, and he is certainly going to be here to stay. And Scotty Scheffler saying, maybe when I get home, I can soak in the fact I won the Masters for the second time. Jordan, if you're in Dallas, you got to go to the world-famous Inwood Tavern. It's the oldest continuously open bar in Dallas. How about that?
Look at the smile on that man. They call him boring. Does that seem boring to you?
He's a man of the people. The tagline for the Inwood Tavern.
Picked up the tab.
Good times, good friends, and cold drinks. I hope they were flowing.
I love it.
For Scotty. We'll have more golf today after the break. Aaron Oberholzer had a different wake up this morning. Our buddy now on the show here on Golf Today. AO, it was great watching you all week on set as part of our Live from the Masters coverage at Augusta National. Of course, we got to start with Scottie Scheffler. Now, two Masters in a three-year span. He already has three wins this season. Seems like a dominant world number one. How long is this run going to go for, AO?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. There's a lot of things that I think that go into these runs. And desire is one of them. When I think about Tiger, the want to factor, will he get tired of working hard? Will he get tired of doing those little things that Ted Scott's talking about? Will kids, as you know, he has one on the way. Will those impact kind of how he goes about his daily life and business as a golfer? They will have an effect for sure, but will he be able to manage that time when they do come, when the kids do come? Those are all things that, you know, you need to take into account. For certain golfers, it wasn't much of a switch. It was, you know, obviously, you know, one could argue it made Jack Nicklaus better. So it's all those that factor in, I think, to the longevity of this run. As far as I see it, you know, I actually woke up, if you can believe it. Well, you can, because you've worked with me before. So I actually woke up this morning. And I looked at the official world golf ranking, and I was like, all right, I got to see what the spread is, right? And it's one of the largest spreads I've ever seen in the world golf ranking. So I said, you know what? I got to look up Tiger Woods circa 2000, 2001, after he'd won the three majors and then after he'd won the Tiger Slam and along with the Players. So I looked that up, and those were ridiculous spreads. Those were 17 to 18 points. Okay. And so I would say that, you know, he's got a 6-point lead, 6.3 point lead. Those are the biggest since Tiger's biggest, quite honestly. Tiger's in a world of his own. But this is the next dominant player is what I'm getting at. And he is dominant now. And I don't see that dominance going anywhere anytime soon, because I just don't see anybody else in the top 10 in the world that has the complete game. When you look at his statistics, even putting now, he's on the positive side of strokes gained putting, which was an issue last year. So when you combine all that, you know, I don't know how you're going to stop the guy.
So Aaron, I'm not trying to be a prisoner of the moment here, but as you talk about maybe that next guy, is it Ludvig Åberg? I mean, given his performance there in Augusta, I mean, I was taken aback by how confident he looked in his first major.
Yeah, I think we all are. It's funny. I watched him a little bit in college here and there and was like, okay, the kid's got a phenomenal golf swing. But, you really can't tell what a guy's going to do when he's in college. You really can't. You know, you're carrying your own bag. You're walking around in shorts. It's three-day tournaments. You really can't tell. I knew he was going to be good, and then he went on to do what he did in the summertime. I'm like, okay, well, now Luke Donald needs to start looking at him for a pick. So once I saw him at the Ryder Cup, I'm like, oh, my gosh, this kid's really good. And then he went out and did what he did at the RSM, which was ridiculous. And then, and I'm like, okay, he's got a great attitude. He's got a phenomenal golf swing. But what really, and the attitude part, I think, is key, because we saw him at the Augusta National smile a ton. I mean, even when he was making mistakes, he was smiling. I noticed that kind of, he's the only guy that I can say right now that I know unequivocally kind of takes the same mental approach to the game as Scottie Scheffler. And I know that because not a lot of other players at 22, 23 have ever done this to me. I'm working on the ground at Pebble Beach this year, and I'm on the ninth hole at Pebble, and I'm walking with Ludwig and Rory, and they're amateurs. And I'm walking down nine, and I stop, and I'm waiting for Rory to hit his second shot. I'm about 40, 50 yards in front and to the right of him. And Ludwig walks right up to me. I mean, he's like, hey, what's going on? And I'm like, hey, Ludwig, how are you? And shake his hand. He introduces himself. And he's like, isn't this great? This is the most awesome place ever. This is the most beautiful place. I'm just so happy to be here. And I'm like, great, man. That's really cool. And it just it really showed me a lot about his personality and who he is. And so if you're talking about two guys that have kind of that it factor upstairs where – it doesn't seem like golf consumes them. It's not their end-all, be-all. Ludwig could be that guy in the future, potentially, that he needs a little more seasoning. You know, and the scary part is that, remember, Ludwig's only looking at he's seeing these golf courses for the first time, okay? Starting in June, he's going to start seeing repeats because that's when he started last year, depending on if he plays the same schedule or not. But right now, he's seeing all these golf courses for the first time, which is – really, really impressive.
George also felt like he was like Vince Vaughn in Wedding Crashers. I mean, Oberg was eating at every turn. You saw him with some type of food. People were trying to bat it out of his hands as he's walking through. It's pretty cool.
You know what I got out of that story? Is that Oberg's human like us, where he's starstruck seeing Aaron Oberholzer for
the
first
time. The commonality, absolutely.
Inside the ropes as part of his welcome to the PGA Tour. One final question before we let you go, and you've played against Tiger eons ago, obviously, in college, during your life on the PGA Tour. With what we're seeing out of Tiger, to our eye, it seems impossible to think that he has life in him yet to try and get to 83. If you're Tiger, do you almost need borderline delusional self-belief to keep pushing forward?
Well, he has that. I think he has that. I also think you need a schedule change. I think personally he's got to accept the fact that, you know, and I think he has, that he has these physical limitations. Well, you know, the classic places where he dominated are out of the question. Memorial, San Diego, Bay Hill. Those are all courses that I don't believe he can win at anymore. I just don't. If he's going to get 83, I think that's going to come at kind of a slice and dice golf course, kind of like where I'm here this week at Hilton Head. It's going to come at a golf course where he can maneuver the ball. It's an easy walk, Colonial here. There's a couple of others that aren't coming to me right now, but you know, maybe even at Connecticut, you know, TPC River Highlands, someplace like that where, you know, the walk isn't that difficult. It's not, he doesn't need a ton of length, or an open championship where he gets on the proper side of the draw. Those are the only places that I see number 83 coming at, quite honestly.
Definitely something to watch for. And as we're going to say goodbye to you, AO, you were talking about, what can you learn about college kids carrying their own bag, playing 54 holes, walking in shorts? Let's pop up the photo of you at San Jose State Western Intercollegiate.
Looks like he likes
it. So here's what I learned about AO. This guy had some swag back in the day playing for the Spartans.
That was the style back then. those are pleated, I think, too. My goodness, pleated shorts back in the day.
That style was timeless, my friend.
There are some things you can't unsee as we say goodbye to AO, and we'll be watching you this week with the RBC Heritage.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
And we touched on it a little bit. How about the week that was for five-time Masters champ Tiger Woods? Despite his tough finish at Augusta, any encouraging signs for the big cat as we look ahead to the rest of major season? We're going to discuss that ahead of the show. Back at it on Golf Today. Roller coaster of a week for 15-time major champion Tiger Woods. Card that won over 73 in his opening round. Remember, that was over 2 days because he was 1-under through 13 before the suspension of play on Thursday. Came out Friday morning, was 2-over through 5. But then remember, Friday afternoon, round 2, an even par 72 for Tiger to make the cut. And history, because he extended his made cut streak to 24. Previously, the record, he was tied with Fred Couples and Gary Player at 23, but Tiger now at 24. Remember, he has missed 4 Masters in the last decade because of various injuries, but Tiger rewriting the record books at Augusta National. So he was just 7 back with 36 holes to go, wondering what Tiger would do on moving day. Well, he struggled big time. 5-time Masters champ, carding a 10-over 82, his highest score ever in 99 career rounds at the Masters. Tiger now has 7 scores of 80 or higher on tour, and 4 of those coming in majors. So after shooting his worst ever major score as a pro, Woods said it'll be a long night and a long warm-up session, but we'll be ready. We, meaning Tiger and his son Charlie, was on hand to not only lend a helping hand, but also kind of play swing coach before the final round, as that final round marked round number 100 for Tiger in his career at the Masters. It was such a heartwarming sight to see Charlie and Tiger on the range together at Augusta National. So Tiger playing on Sunday alongside U.S. amateur runner-up Neil Shipley, who took low am honors this week after his round. I mean, how cool is this for Shipley, the Ohio State Buckeye? He said he was great to me all day. Couldn't be more appreciative of him just being awesome today. It was really cool to be around him. Just the attention he gets, the roars, the crowds were phenomenal. So Tiger's 60th place finish, his worst at the year's first major since he missed the cut back in 1996 as an amateur. Despite those struggles this week, proved to be a step in the right direction for Tiger when it came to playing 72 holes, the first time we saw him do that since the 2023 Genesis Invitational, February of that year, and the first weekend the Tigers completed a major since the 2022 Masters.
Tiger, it's remarkable how you can be competitive for a couple of days without any reps. How can you turn 2 rounds into 4 moving forward?
Well, this is a golf course I knew going into it, so I got to do my homework, going forward at Pinehurst and Valhalla and Troon. But that's kind of the game plan. It's always nice coming back here because I know the golf course. I know how to play it and kind of simulate shots. But granted, it's never quite the same as getting out here and doing it, right? Same thing. I heard there's some changes at the next couple of sites. So got to get up there early and check them out.
What will be the challenge to get ready for Valhalla if that's the next one?
Well, just keep lifting, keep the modes going, keep the body moving, keep getting stronger, keep progressing, and hopefully the practice sessions will keep getting longer.
In terms of the achievement, not the outcome of the tournament, but the achievement for you personally, how do you rate this performance this week?
It was a good week. It was a good week all around. I think that coming in here and not having played a full tournament in a very long time, it was a good fight on Thursday and Friday. Unfortunately, yesterday didn't quite turn out the way I wanted to. Today, the round that the way that Tom is playing is what I thought I had in my system. Unfortunately, I just didn't produce it.
So since the car accident a few years ago, just the second time the Tigers played all 72 holes, and we've seen him make it without a setback this week at the Masters. What's your big takeaway from his performance?
I'll start with the beginning of the tournament, those first 2 rounds. For him to be able to battle on Friday, capping off those 23 holes, playing even golf in those brutal conditions, knowing the names that weren't able to get to the weekend, that's what I hold on to. But George, that's what I feel like as I assess Tiger Woods, that's where my fandom is with Tiger, is taking, they're not small wins, that's major. 24 consecutive cuts made at the Masters is major. But then you have to compartmentalize that and understand what you watched in the weekend was very bad golf. And that's the realization that this is who Tiger Woods is for 72 holes. Now, again, you mentioned it's only the third time since 2020 that that's happened. But yet still, you go, okay, really impressive Thursday and Friday. Given what's in front of him, given what he's battling. But then you go, but this is what Saturday and Sundays are going to look like if he does get there. It's hard to discount him because you look at 2019, and when he won that fifth jacket, his 15th major, it was, how in the heck did this happen? You had that moment. But now I look, and there's an interesting quote somebody said, is Tiger seems as though he's as happy to be there as he was when he was winning. That same happiness of winning tournaments is similar to just being there. Tiger's fueled by being that guy who's got the competitive edge. It's not there. His body is obviously different. I don't know how you can expect anything more than those type of achievements, which were pretty impressive to get to the weekend, Jordan.
Yeah, and I think in 2018-19, he had won the Tour Championship, was close at both the Open and the PGA Championship in 2018, had a top 10 finish leading up to the Masters. So when he won, it was like, all right, he's on this plane where it makes sense that Tiger is getting there. His body was different then, to your point, Jordan, to where he is now. Now just seeing him for 72 holes is a win for golf fans in a major. And I think, I mean, I've alluded to this, he almost needs like irrational self-confidence to think that I'm going to somehow recapture that 1 week where the body, the conditions, the game all sync up and I'm in contention, or to even fancy the thought of getting to 83. Because if any rational mind seeing his results thinks there's no chance he could win again on the PGA Tour. But for Tiger, if he keeps going forward the next, call it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and he even has that 1 week, then it's all worthwhile.
Oh,
and I even think just the process of gearing up for that and having moments with Charlie where even if he doesn't have that week, it's still worth it as a competitor.
And look at the moments. You laid out a few of them. I mean, to have Charlie out there on the range with him on Sunday, we remember the embrace in 2019 when he won that fifth jacket, to think about the full circle moment when it was his mother and father there when he won his first green jacket. Then you think about the moment playing with Neil Shipley and how cool that was for Neil. How about Vern, him shaking his hand on 16? Like, those moments Tiger's still providing. Now, nobody wants Tiger to be some sort of show pony that's out there for the nostalgia. But again, you do have to go back to Thursday and Friday and say, this guy played 23 holes on Friday in brutal conditions. And we saw the likes that didn't make it to the weekend, and he got there. So is he building because of that irrational confidence that he can do it again? Maybe. But you got to throw logic in there when you talk about Tiger. But then you also got to temper it and say, it's still Tiger Woods, George. It's still Tiger. So you just never know. And it's impressive what he was able to achieve in those first 2 days. That's what I hold on to.
Yeah, I actually take some positives from those first couple days. But we're going to have a couple gentlemen on the show, Rex and Lab. Yeah. We're glass half full, we're going to call it. They may be the dark cloud, maybe glass half empty, as their dynamic duo is going to hop on and talk about everything. Scottie Scheffler. How long is this Scheffler run of dominance going to go? What do they think of Tiger's performance? That's on the other side of the short break.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
How about this? This is the fewest Masters starts to win the event multiple times. We know Horton Smith, he did it twice in 1934 and 36. Only took Scotty 5 starts at Augusta National to win the Masters on 2 separate occasions. That betters the mark of Jimmy DeMeritt, Arnold Palmer, and Bubba Watson. It is time to continue the conversation with a Golf Today roundtable as we welcome in Golf Channel senior writers Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. Rex, let's start with you as Scottie Scheffler gets it done at Augusta National for the second time. It appeared by brute force this time. How are we going to define this era of Scheffler?
I mean, the era of Scheffler is starting to inch towards Tiger Woods. We talked about this last night on the podcast with Lavner. I think we're not going to get there because Tiger was such a generational player. But certainly when you talk to other players, the idea is if you see Scottie's name on a leaderboard, it's starting to feel like Tiger Woods. You're starting to look over your shoulder. You're starting to think it's already over. Because there was a ton about halfway through the round on Sunday at Augusta National where you thought this is going to be exciting. This is going to be a 3-4 players in the mix. They're all going to be dueling it out on the back nine on Sunday, exactly what you want. And then Scottie kind of did the Tiger Woods thing on the ninth hole, hits it almost in the hole, hits it to kick in range, birdies the 10th hole. And it seems like it was over at that point. And very few players have been able to do that. So I'm always reluctant to compare anyone to Tiger Woods because it's so unfair. It's so unrealistic, but he's getting close.
Yeah, Rex, I think that this Masters was certainly revealing in ways that we haven't seen over the past 2 years with Scottie Scheffler. Obviously, we see the technical proficiency, the long and straight driving, the towering iron shots, the great hands on and around the greens. Making six birdies in his last 11 holes to put the tournament on ice was obviously impressive. But what I took away was his presence. And Scottie Scheffler is not intimidating in the traditional sense, but he is fearsome when going head-to-head against some of his opponents. I think that's what played out over 72 holes at Augusta National. Think about the first two rounds. He's paired with Roy McIlroy and Xander Schauffele. All Scottie does in the opening round was throw down a 66. On Friday, in the most difficult conditions, he stands strong, shoots 72 when Roy McIlroy gets blown off the map. On Saturday, paired with Nikolai Hogard in the penultimate group. While Nikolai Hogard surges into the lead and then flies too close to the sun, making five straight bogeys, Scottie Scheffler is the one who kind of withstands that surge and ends up staking himself the 54-hole lead. And then on Sunday, against Colin Morikawa, one of the very best iron players we have seen over the past 5 years on the PGA Tour, Scottie Scheffler was even more precise and avoided the uncharacteristic blunders that Colin Morikawa made on the ninth hole and then on the 11th hole as well. And so Scottie Scheffler is just putting so much pressure on his opponents, not to play necessarily perfect golf, but getting very, very close to mistake-free golf, and that's a very uncomfortable position to play from.
You know, I was listening to an extremely fascinating conversation, Rex and Lav, you guys were having on your podcast yesterday, and it was about, Rex, it was about Scottie Scheffler and, you know, this incredible run he's on, but fatherhood being right in front of him. It's a very nuanced conversation because, obviously, it's one of the greatest gifts in the world, becoming a parent, especially for the first time. But how do you envision that impacting this star and the level in which he's playing at with such an important part of life directly in front of him?
Right now, it's impossible for me to imagine anything impacting him as a player based on just the way he's been able to do the last, 2 years, certainly what he's done the last few weeks on the PGA Tour. There is something to be said for the idea, and he said it, Scottie said it last night in his press conference. He has his priorities clearly right where he wants them to be. And first and foremost is going to be family. It's going to be his wife, Meredith. It's going to be the newborn that they're hoping to welcome in just a few weeks. It's going to be the rest of his family. I think that's always been the case. So I'm not quite sure how it's going to impact him as a player, as a professional. But there is something to be said for it's a really selfish sport. To get to number one in the world, you have to have such a singular focus where you almost put everything else on the back burner. I've seen it from players time and time again. It's a lonely game. You spend a lot of time on the range when you're at home. You just don't show up to play golf tournaments and expect something magical to happen if you haven't put the time in. But if anyone can find the balance, I think Scottie Scheffler would be the one that can do it.
Lev, we've seen this movie play out before with Scottie Scheffler back in 2022, wins the Masters, had four wins on the season, didn't win again after that. Now he has three wins, a green jacket. In his career, he's never won a PGA Tour event after the Masters on the PGA Tour schedule. Why is this year going to be different?
George, you don't sound convinced that Scottie Scheffler is all of a sudden going to learn how to win in June or July. I'm not so sure that we're going to see any sort of downturn in form. And I think it's so important what happened at the Masters because a favorite going into the tournament oftentimes does not win. But this was a combination where Scottie Scheffler was a 4-1 favorite, ends up doing what he was doing. Yes, he's playing great golf. He's lost to just a total of one golfer since the beginning of March. But I also think you have to look at the landscape, George. The reason why Scottie Scheffler was such a prohibitive favorite at Augusta National was look at the rest of the top 10 players in the world, whether it was Wyndham Clark, who missed the cut at Augusta National, making his first Masters appearance, but Roy McIlroy is searching for his game, does not have a win since Dubai earlier this year. John Rahm finished T45 in his Masters title defense. Victor Hovland is searching, just withdrew from the RBC Heritage so he can toil away from the spotlight and try to get his game in order. Xander Schauffele, who was in contention at the Masters, at least with an outside chance, admitted that his game is still not all the way there. The rest of sort of the B tier, to Scottie Scheffler's A tier, needs to find some sort of semblance of consistency and to challenge him, or this is going to be the year where Scottie Scheffler doesn't just win three or four times. I think it's very conceivable he could win five, six, or seven times.
You know, Lav, looking at Ludvig Åberg, what he was able to do in his first major performance, nonetheless at Augusta, losing to only the greatest player in the world right now on the planet, he looks so comfortable. He looks so calm and collected out there. What do you make of his first performance on that type of stage?
I mean, this is exactly what we have seen since Ludwig Åberg turned pro last year at the NCAA championship after a pretty decorated career at Texas Tech. Found himself right in contention on the PGA Tour, acclimated himself quite nicely. Went across the pond after the rest of the PGA Tour season was continuing in the playoffs. He wins in Europe as well. He wins on the PGA Tour. He acclimates himself well in such a tense environment like the Ryder Cup. None of his peers are surprised by what Ludwig Åberg is doing and why he has crashed the top 10 in the world ranking in less than a year as a pro. I think the only surprise was to see him at Augusta National fare as well as he did. Obviously, his ball striking was going to put him in position. Obviously, the sort of on-course comportment that he has was sort of a good fit for a week when a lot of patience, a lot of diligence, a lot of level-headedness was rewarded, and I think you saw that certainly in the top five on the leaderboard there. I mean, Ludwig Åberg, in less than a year, has to be considered on the short list of favorites for every major championship moving forward because he's built for this test, and he has proven it over the past 10 months or so.
And he's played in exactly one major championship. That's sort of the amazing part. I mean, I'll go back to last fall when Lav and I were talking about this on the podcast, and the idea that he was going to play on the Ryder Cup, and we always compare the Ryder Cup to being in the final round of the major with a chance to win. He had never played in one before, so it was baffling to me how he was going to find a way to sort of endure all of that pressure that he'd never done before. Didn't have a problem whatsoever. My column last night was on the idea there's this dogma that a first-timer has not won at Augusta National since 1979, since Fuzzy Zeller did it. It's been almost half a century since it happened. And we were watching yesterday, and I thought, if it's not for Scottie Scheffler doing Scottie Scheffler things, being special and sort of walking away from the field, Ludwig not only would have won, he probably would have done it pretty easily. I mean, he easily won the B flight. I talked to his caddy yesterday afternoon, and we were sort of talking about the idea that they touched on it early in the week, the idea that a rookie has not won at the Masters in that long. And Joe immediately rolled his eyes, and he said, not only did I expect him to win, but I expect him to win every major that he plays in. He's that special of a player. Certainly he's a robot on the golf course. I've never seen somebody hit so many shots that don't have any curve to them. That number is not familiar to the game that I play or that I see on a PGA Tour Sunday. But the other half is how confident he is on the golf course. I don't think anybody enjoyed themselves yesterday than Ludwig, even Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, Åberg playing with a ton of confidence, and rightly so, how he's ratcheted up the world ranks to seventh. So many other storylines we could hit on, be it like Bryson, Max Homa, the performance those guys had. But we have to end it with Tiger Woods and what we saw. Tiger extending the cut streak to 24 straight, but then fading completely from contention with that Saturday 82. Lav, how are we going to write this final chapter for Tiger?
I leave Augusta National, George, probably as pessimistic as I ever have about Tiger Woods. I think just for this reason. You know, Rex was in Bahamas for the Hero World Challenge. I listened to the press conference and saw his interview transcripts for the rest of the week. And that was, you know, he offered a pretty optimistic view of what his 2024 was going to look like. He offered sort of this once-a-month playing cadence that he was going to be saying. He, you know, the lower right leg really wasn't the issue anymore. He had felt as good as he had in a very long time. And yet we're at the point now where he's finishing dead last in the Masters. He's clearly hampered, not just by the leg issues, but his lower back was obviously causing him some severe limitations as well. What has gone on in the past 4 months that has gotten Tiger Woods from a point where he was speaking optimistically in early December in the Bahamas to now Augusta National, where it's sort of a athletic marvel that he can just finish 72 holes? He's completed just 5 tournament rounds this year, and yet this is the physical shape he's in. I'm not optimistic for the rest of the major championship season. I just hope that he can find some sort of joy and solace in this, because it's hard to watch at this point.
I'm with Lav on this one. It is hard to watch, and certainly you saw him on the golf course last week. I do think it's funny that Lavner ran out onto the golf course on Saturday because he was sure that Tiger was going to withdraw. And my take was, yes, he's probably uncomfortable. Yes, things on his body hurt. We all know that about Tiger Woods. But I don't think this was an injury on any level. I think this has everything to do with he's just not playing golf very well right now. And the byproduct of that is because he can't practice. He can't put the time. He can't put the effort into it. I was encouraged by 72 holes. I said at the beginning of the week, like, we haven't seen it in a long time. So I needed for him to stay upright for 72 holes. That's a step in the right direction, but he still has a long way to go.
Yeah, it was at least seven within the lead going into the weekend when the wheels kind of fell off. But that's, I mean, the rigors of competing in majors for 72 holes is a completely different test. All right, guys, enjoyed having you on the Rex and Lav.
Stay with us on the other side, an exclusive sit-down interview with Masters champion Scottie Scheffler and our own Todd Lewis that you will not want to miss.
Scotty, I want to go back to the first nine on Sunday. You bogey the seventh hole, your lead is gone. Then you birdie 8, 9, and 10, pull away and win the tournament. What were your thoughts as you came to the eighth tee that helped propel that charge?
I was just trying to stay patient. You know, I felt like I was playing good golf. I hit some good iron shots to start the round, and we had just gotten the winds totally wrong. And you know, we had been really good about getting the winds right most of the week, and so I think we were kind of due to, you know, catch a few bad breaks when it came to the wind. But I had some nice up and downs. You know, we stayed in it pretty well. You know, the bad tee ball on seven kind of cost me, but outside of that, I felt like I was playing really well, and so I just tried to do my best to stay patient and hit the ball to the right spots, not try and force it in there. And, you know, we were able to do that, and it was a nice momentum putt I made there on eight that kind of got me going for the day.
You were a very good player when you won here in 2022. Now you seem to have gone to another level. How more refined a player are you now than you were 2 years ago?
I'd like to think that I'm more refined mentally. I feel like I'm maturing as a person and a player. I felt like emotionally this week it was as good as I've been over the course of a four-round tournament. I didn't really get very animated at all, I don't think. And Teddy did a good job of helping me manage kind of the surprises out there when things don't go the way that I think they should. And I think emotionally this has been one of my best weeks, I think, on the course.
Motivation, I'd like to talk about that with you. What does motivate you? Is it outside competition, other players, or maybe the inner competition you have with yourself to be the best? Which is it?
I think it's a combination of both. One of the things I love about golf is being able to get the most out of, you know, myself and my game. I feel like it's one of the games that you can just continue to work at for forever and ever and never quite conquer it. And then as far as the competition goes, whatever we're doing, you know, I love winning and I really, really hate to lose. And so I think it's a combination of both those things.
You and I know a lot of players that spend a lot of money on sports psychologists. You have your faith, which seems to free you up. How important, or how would you quantify the importance of your faith for you as a player and as a person?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, it's the reason why I'm out here living life. You know, it's everything to me. You know, my faith, it really is. It's everything to me. You know, I believe in a creator, and you know, one of the things my buddies told me this morning when I talked about how badly I wanted to win this tournament was that victory was already secure. Victory was secure on the cross, you know, 2,000 years ago, and whether or not I won this golf tournament, you know, my life, you know, it may change for a little bit out here on the golf course, but at the end of the day, I'm still the same person. My friends, we're still gonna have a good time riding home tonight, whether or not I won or lost the tournament, you know, and granted, it's gonna be a bit more fun with the jacket, but we still would have had a good time regardless.
And you said this week pretty adamantly that golf doesn't define you, but knowing how competitive you are, when did you realize that in your life?
I'm not really sure. I think that's part of the constant battle. I think sometimes when you're out here competing, that's what you're viewed as. You're viewed as your score to the fans, to people in the media. That's what you are. It's, you know, that's the question when you go, oh, hey, how'd you do last week? You know, and it's like, well, I shot, you know, 10 under or whatever it is. You know, that's how you're defined out here on the golf course to a lot of people. And so I think that's part of the constant battle is to not have my score be what defines me as a person. Just, you know, have golf be golf and have the rest of my life be the rest of my life.
You're going to be a father very soon. It's going to be a wonderful time for you. And, of course, kids are influenced by a lot of things in society. If there was a kid that was watching you on the grounds today play and then heard your acceptance speech while wearing your green jacket, what do you hope that kid takes away from that experience?
Wow, that's a loaded question. I'm hoping that he takes away some of the gratefulness that I have because I really felt that when I was up there speaking. I hope that came across because I really am extremely thankful for the people that have been put in my life. You know, I've had a coach for the last 20 years that's basically like a second father to me. I have great parents. I have a great wife. I have the best support system at home that I could ever dream of having. And so I hope that they could remember just the thankfulness, because I really am so thankful for the people that I have around me.
You're a great champion and a great person. Thank you, Scotty.
Thanks.
Wanted to share this from Max Homa on Golf Today, a potential too long didn't read upcoming. Winning doesn't always come with a trophy. Winning is fickle. Learning, working, growing, and progressing is the dream. I'd love to have won a green jacket today. It hurts, losing sucks, but with the right mindset, losing leads to better. And my goal in life is to constantly improve and see where that takes me. Hopefully that's major championships, and maybe it's not. I'm okay with either knowing that I'm doing everything I can to make it happen. I have a sneaky suspicion it will, but that's to be determined by future Sundays. Thank you all so much for the support this week. I can't explain how amazing it was. I am so grateful. Hashtag golf Homa's best ever finish in a major, T3 at Augusta National. We still have more Golf Today coming up. We welcome in Brentley Rome. I'm Brentley. When you look at the field this week, is Stanford the tree, the clear-cut favorite?
You know, if you would have asked me that 3 months ago, kind of projecting out, I would have said absolutely not, George. And that's because Michael Thorbjornsson, the star, missed all fall with a stress fracture in that back, came back earlier this spring in Hawaii, finished outside the top 70 in a tournament. But since then, he's been absolutely nails. I mean, he's won Cabo. He was runner-up at the Goodwin. And Stanford's really saved their season. I mean, they were way below 500. They almost were not going to be eligible for an at-large regional bid. So as they come into this event, there's still some question marks at the back end of that lineup. But with Michael Thorbjornsson at the top, I think Stanford could be looking at their first win here since 2019.
Speaking of Stanford, we just saw Tiger make the cut, walk 72 holes at the Masters. But there's another Tiger you've got your eyes on this week out at Pasatiempo. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so this kid, Tiger Christensen from Arizona, junior from Hamburg, Germany, has one of the more interesting backstories. George, I know you're a big music guy, maybe some techno music here, but Tiger's dad, Alex Christensen, is actually a music producer, a DJ. His group was responsible for the first techno song to reach number one on the European charts. His mom, Nikki, was also former pop star, had the nickname Roller Girl. So eclectic background for Tiger. And if you guess about the name, yeah, he was named after Tiger Woods, but he was also named after Alex's friend, the boxer Darius Michael Shevsky. So a lot to Tiger's story. He's had a breakout year, qualified for the Open last summer, couple wins this season, little bit up and down, but he's really the linchpin of this team. And you know, I mentioned that six count five format where the best five scores for each team count out of the six-man lineup. Arizona is one of the deeper teams in this field and in the entire country. They got six guys in the top 200 of the national collegiate rankings, and Tiger, of course, one of the top-ranked players in the country at number 16.
Brentley, we were just showing how Texas won this event back in 2015 with Scottie Scheffler. They won it a couple years ago in 2022 as well, before not participating last year. What do you think of their chances this week?
Well, it's worth noting, George, that this is a completely different team. I mean, you look at 2 years ago, the Cootey twins, Cole Hammer, win the NCAA championship later that year. No players are left from that Longhorn squad. They got two seniors, but Brian Stark and Nathan Petronzio, both transfers. And this is a team that the last three semesters, I mean, I'll come out and say it, they were immature. They were inconsistent. And really, they hit rock bottom earlier this spring in Hawaii at the Armor RA. They finished 15th. John Fields brings the boys back to Austin and implements a lot of new rules, ramps up workouts, changes the qualifying structure, and this team's responded. They've been second twice in third since this, so I look for them to contend this week.
That seems to be a working recipe so far for the Longhorns. And Brentley, you were in Augusta all week. You've had a front row seat to Scottie Scheffler's career dating back to his junior days. What are your takeaways from what we're now seeing with Scottie Scheffler, the two-time Masters champ?
Well, gosh, I mean, my first tournament covering Scottie Scheffler was way back at that 2013 U.S. Junior when he beats Doug Gim in the semis, and then Davis Riley, another PGA Tour player now, in the final at Martis Camp. And I think from that moment on, you just really knew that this kid had something special. And I got a chance to catch up with John Fields, the Texas coach, this morning, and he talked about the first time he remembered watching Scottie. He was 12 years old, playing in a junior event, par three, hits a sprinkler head, and his ball goes into a bush. And he remembers Scottie walking up there, figuring out a way to make four, and just really never lost his cool. But it's interesting, that interview that we played with Todd Lewis and Scottie just a little bit ago, where he says he doesn't really realize or remember the moment exactly when he realized that golf didn't define him. But when you talk to John Fields and you look back at that first semester in Texas, Scottie Scheffler wasn't the mental giant that he is now. I mean, it was a really frustrating semester for him. Meredith was at Texas A&M, so they were apart there. He was really stressed out about school, trying to get into the business school. And he was playing a tournament, the Nike Collegiate at Pumpkin Ridge, hits a ball in the water, and really shouts out a very loud expletive. And that was kind of the moment where, you know, Fields made him go apologize to the coach that heard that. And then that next semester, the spring of his freshman year, John Fields remembers Scottie started traveling to tournaments with his Bible, started diving back into the Word. And, you know, that semester was a pretty good one. He wins the Western Intercollegiate the same day that Jordan Spieth wins the Masters, by the way. So that's a pretty interesting moment of synergy there. And he's the Big 12 individual champion, National Freshman of the Year. And I mean, fast forward all these years, George, and he's a two-time Masters champion. And I think he can really look back on that first semester of college as kind of a turning point for him.
And Brentley, I remember covering his first PGA Tour start when he was a 17-year-old amateur at the 2014, what was then the Byron Nelson, now the CJ Cup. And you're hearing rumblings of like the next Spieth. Was like, is that too much pressure to put on Scottie Scheffler? Now it seems like he could ascend past the heights that we even saw out of Jordan Spieth, which is pretty amazing. Brentley, we're going to check in with you throughout the week. Be good.
Welcome back to Golf Today. We've got another major championship to look forward to this week as the best women in the game compete in the Chevron Championship. The major is being played at the club at Carlton Woods in the Houston suburbs for the second year after having moved from California prior to the 2023 tournament.
Let's take a look at the major venues for the 2024 major season. Like you know, it kicks off at the Chevron Championship. The U.S. Women's Open is in Lancaster, PA. How about the KPMG Women's PGA Championship in Sahali up in Washington? Amundi Evian Championship, familiar venue, and hard to top the AIG Women's Open, the old course at St. Andrews. And we have friend of the show joining us now, Golf Week senior writer Beth Ann Nichols. Beth Ann, we got to start with world number one, Nelly Korda. We've seen the run that Scottie Scheffler has done with three wins in a four-start span. Nelly Korda has four straight wins on the LPGA Tour, trying to make it five in a row at the Chevron Championship. How do you put this into historical perspective?
Well, when you look at all the folks who have done this before her, and what she's doing right now, they're the greatest of all time. So, you know, she's the first American to win four of her first five starts since Kathy Whitworth. She's the first American to win four consecutive starts since Nancy Lopez. If she were to go on to win at the Chevron this week, she'd be one of only three players to win five consecutive starts on the LPGA, joining the great Nancy Lopez, who, of course, won five consecutive in that 1978 rookie season that was absolutely magical. And Annika Sorenstam, and she won those five tournaments over the stretch of two seasons, at the tail end of 2004 and the front of 2005. And that fifth title, of course, came at the what's now the Chevron Championship. So, and she won handily, by the way, too. So, you know, it's rarefied air, no matter how you look at it.
Beth Ann, we've seen, just coming off the Masters, the weapon that the caddy can be for a champion. Like we just saw Scottie Scheffler and Ted Scott. What can you tell us about Nelly's caddy, Jason McDeed?
Well, it's a little bit different than Ted Scott because it's been a short amount of time and you can see how Scotty skyrocketed. But with Jason McDead, he's been with Nelly since the beginning of the 2018 season. So he's been alongside her for, you know, since she started winning on the LPGA. Her first victory, one of 12, came that year. And they've really kind of grown together out there. She refers to him as a big brother. He's married to Caroline Masson, a fellow LPGA player who they recently celebrated their birth of their first child last year. So, you know, they're learning out there. And I love recently that she said that they've learned when to be conservative and when to be more aggressive, which is extremely important when you get in so many of these, you know, high stress situations, that they're on the same page. And when she hits a bad shot, he's also really good at giving her, you know, a good bit of encouragement. He knows what to say and when to say it, which I think is job number one.
Beth, then let's shift our focus to the defending champ, Lilia Vu, who's had some health issues recently. What's her status coming into this week with her title defense at the Chevron Championship?
You know, it's been a disappointing season for Lilia because of this back injury that keeps flaring up that, you know, they're still working on. I think it was probably wise for her to take off the match play and have a little bit of an extended break to work on that. Plus the weather conditions in Vegas were horrid. So maybe a good idea not to have some bad memories there. But you know, Lilia's admitted that she put too much pressure on herself trying to do what she did last year, which was win two majors and become LPGA Player of the Year and win four times. So, you know, that's a tough act to follow for any player. So she's really trying to focus on having fun out there and, of course, being healthy.
Beth Ann, do we like Lydia Ko's chances this week?
I don't see how you can't like Lydia Ko's chances, even though she hasn't really been much of a factor in the majors for a long time. But when you look at how she started the season and the confidence that she has, you know, I definitely think that she's one to watch. But it's interesting because I recently had a conversation with Joanne Carner, who, of course, a phenomenal American player. And we were talking about Lydia, who only needs one more point to get into the Hall of Fame. And she said, you know, I gassed four tournaments when I just needed one more point. She said it took me a long time to get over that hump. So I think that really helps us put into perspective how hard it is when you get so close to the finish line of getting those 27 points. You just need one more, that even if the great Joanne Carner had a hard time crossing the finish line, that we can cut Lydia a little slack.
Beth Ann, speaking of crossing the finish line, the recent news, two-time major champion So-Yeon Yoo announcing that she's going to retire following the Chevron Championship. Heck of a way to cap off what's been an incredible career.
Absolutely. You know, when I think of So-Yeon, I think of first class everything, you know, not only her golf game, but just the way she carries herself, how she's interacted with the press and fans for all these years. You know, she is a true pro's pro. And I think at only 33 years old, I think that might shock a lot of people to see, you know, a former number one, two-time major winner, you know, pack it in so early. But when you think about the fact that she turned pro at 17, won a bunch on the Korean LPGA before she came over to America, she spent a long time away from her culture, away from her family. And if it's time for a next chapter in life, whether that's her career or starting a family, you know, one can understand why she'd want to go home to do that. So I'll be really interested to hear what she has to say this week about her decision. But yeah, we're sure going to miss So-Yeon.
Yeah, for sure. Beth Ann, I appreciate your insight as always, and looking forward to the season's first major on the LPGA Tour with the Chevron Championship.
Thank you.
Continuing on Golf Today, you may not know this, but today, Monday, April 15th, is an important day. It marks the first day this year where across the country, golfers with a handicap index can post a score a day the USGA has coined golf's opening round. So here's how to establish and maintain a handicap index, something that I do year in and year out. Sign up as a member of an authorized golf club. Post your score that includes nine-hole or incomplete rounds on the day that you play. Once you have 54 holes worth of scores posted, your handicap index will then be established. Pretty simple. Pleased now to be joined by Stephen Edmondson, USGA's Managing Director of Handicapping and Course Rating. And Stephen, in January, the USGA and RNA updated the World Handicap System. How has that been received by golfers so far?
Great question, and thank you for both of you for having me on the show today. It's been received quite well. So as you guys should know, the revisions were released January 16th for us in the United States, in the U.S. territories, if you will. But a lot of the state wasn't active. We have something called active seasons for the United States. And today, by the way, is golf's opening rounds. The first time in the United States where all 50 states enjoy the active season. So the feedback has been really good. We've rolled out three key changes that every golfer really should know about. But we're thrilled with these changes. I got to let you know that we very much feel like these changes are reflective of how and where the game is being played at today. So kind of meeting the golfer where they are, if you will. So super excited about these changes.
Stephen, what's the main change to nine-hole scoring?
Yeah, so that's probably been the biggest change that we rolled out is our treatment of nine-hole scores. And just to put it in perspective, almost 20% of all scores posted, and that's on an annual basis for us in the handicap system, that's close to 80 million rounds posted on an annual basis, are nine-hole rounds. In new golfers, those that are new to the game are posting, playing almost 40% of the rounds are nine-hole rounds. So a significant trend, if you will, for the nine-hole play. So we're excited about these changes. The changes for nine-hole rounds is essentially, as you know, if you played and posted nine holes in the past, you played that nine-hole round, you posted that score, and it literally waited there for another nine-hole round to be combined with, right? So you might have had a really good nine-hole round. You might have shot a 39. Then you, the next 2 weeks later, you shot another nine-hole round. And it was a 45, and you get this combined 18-hole score, right? It's that 39 and 45 combined. Did that combined score really reflect that player's ability on any one of those given days? And the answer is no. So super excited. We think this is much more responsive, right? So now when you play, you post nine holes the very next day, your handicap index will be reflected from that nine-hole score. So that nine-hole score gets an 18-hole score differential automatically assigned to it the very next day. That's important because if you play a lot of nine-hole rounds, now you got something that's just as responsive as if you were to play 18-hole rounds, right? You've got something that's going to be a better indicator of play on a given day, and it's just more consistent overall. So for those that play a lot of nine-hole rounds, they've been super pleased with or that specific revision, if you will.
Yeah, it's that time of year. So many people are playing in after-work leagues, and they're trying to catch a quick nine on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, what have you. I know, Stephen, I mean, there's been a huge shift seemingly in the industry over the last 5 years. We have short courses becoming all the rage, popping up all around the country. How is the USGA now treating short courses?
Yeah, the same. I think the trend is the same. Is we're really trying to meet where the game is, how it's being played today, and kind of where it's going in the future, if you will. So that means shorter, quicker forms of play, right? Yeah, we just touched on the nine-hole play. There's over 600 par three courses in the United States alone that previously did not or were not part of the World Handicap System. They weren't eligible to have a course rating and slope rating previously. So that was important for us. So about 4 years ago, we set out to try to include them, and we lowered our standard, if you will, from the minimum requirements to have a course rating and slope rating to 750 yards for nine holes, 1,500 yards for 18 holes, which means now that we've got these 600 plus par three courses as part of the World Handicap System. Super excited. Again, players new to the game, players just looking for a quick round of golf, a quick, you know, fun round of golf, players that might be aging out of the game, if you will. Now that they can be retained a bit longer and have to enjoy the same benefits of a handicap index to be part of the WHS.
Stephen, how about those who like to, you know, live on the edge a little bit, challenge the weather or challenge to get a round in before darkness cuts that round short? What is the update to 10 to 17 hole scoring?
Yeah, I love it, Jordan. That happens to more of us than we think, right? We get out there, something happened with the weather, daylight comes a little quicker, slow play for the day, unfortunately, what happens? We can't finish our round of golf. So maybe we left off the 16th hole, the 15th hole, whatever that is. We didn't want to complicate things. We want as many scores as posted, because the principle is the more scores you get posted for a player, the better you can, a better indicator of someone's demonstrated ability. So now, if you post between 10 and 17 holes, basically not finishing your 18-hole round, we're just going to ask you to post hole by hole. And we're going to do the same procedure that we do with a nine-hole score. We're going to scale that score up to as if you played an 18-hole round. we're putting a premium in all the holes that you actually played, the course difficulty, all that exists. That's part of the great world handicap system that we have today. The holes that you didn't play get kind of a neutral statistical value, if you will, assigned based off of a player's handicap index. So a player of a handicap that might have a handicap index of 10.0 is going to be treated differently with a player with a 20.0, even if they both shot a 45 or 17 holes, they both shot a 89, right? We're going to treat them differently with their expected score based off their handicap index. And this means, again, you as a golfer shouldn't have to worry, just post that hole by hole round, if you will, let the system do its work for you. The very next day, once again, you'll have that 17-hole score, that 15-hole score, the 9-hole score that we just talked about, yet with an equivalent 18-hole score differential.
Yeah, that makes sense. He is Stephen Edmondson, the USGA's Managing Director of Handicapping. Stephen, good to be with you and excited to be part of golf's opening day.
Thank you. Thank you both for having me on. And remember, everyone, play and let's post the score. Thank you.
Let's take a look at the top 5 moments of joy presented by FootJoy. Drumroll, please. We're going to start with number 5. That was the very beginning of the week. Masters started off with the rare solar eclipse. You see Patriots, players, caddies, everyone enjoying the moment. And how cool is that with the Masters?
I didn't have the shades, so I still looked up, and I've regretted it ever since.
With the Masters eyewear, it was already pretty cool. Being sold on eBay and
how about
all
this people? Moment, though? Gary Woodland, that was incredible. One of my favorites.
You see Brooks Koepka. Yeah, Gary Woodland had the hole-in-one. The par 3 contest is when you got the players and their families, Maya and Sammy Spieth. Maya Fowler and Sammy Spieth becoming fast friends. This is special, Jordan. Number 3
legends. 3 drives right down the middle. One of my favorite comments was Jack as he leaned over Golden Bear to tee it up. He said, the hardest part is just getting the ball down on the tee. Legends of the game, Titans.
Yeah, the honorary starters, Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, and Gary Player. And then number 2, Tiger Woods, the scene for the final round as Tiger, of course, made the cut into the weekend, the final round marking his 100th career round at Augusta National.
He gave us something to cheer for about 48 hours, and I'm grateful for that as a golf fan and my favorite athlete in all of sport, Neil Shipley, at a moment he'll never forget.
And same goes for Scottie Scheffler. It was neat to see that rare display of emotion kind of erupting out of Scottie after he won the Masters for a second time and got reacquainted with that green jacket. Had to put it on John Rahm a year ago, and then John Rahm returns the favor in 2024, as that's the second green jacket now for Scottie
Scheffler.
And in
those 2 years, he feels like a different champion putting that green jacket on for the second time. So much growth, so calm and cerebral in the moment, was ready for the moment and delivered.
Yeah, these are the majors for 2024. We got PGA Championship at Valhalla, U.S. Open returns to Pinehurst, and the Open Championship at Royal Troon. But the question then comes up, will Scottie ever get complacent?
Your rivals will be hoping that at some point you're going to take your eye off the ball. By the time of the next major in a month's time, you'll have a baby in your arms. What are the chances that you think you will take your eye off the ball?
Well, I'm definitely not going to intentionally take my eye off the ball. I will go home, soak in this victory tonight. We'll definitely enjoy the birth of my first child. But with that being said, I still love competing. My priorities will change here very soon. You know, my son or daughter will now be the main priority along with my wife. So golf will now be, you know, probably fourth in line. But I still love competing. I don't plan on taking my eye off the ball anytime soon, that's for sure.
I mean, those are the type of questions I guess you kind of have to ask. But if you're, I mean, Scottie, what are you going to say? Yeah, I'm going to be good for a couple of years and then take my eye off the ball. Or it's like, I'm great now, I'm going to suck in a few years' time.
I kind of chuckled at the response. He said, I'm not intentionally going to do that. But he does understand there's going to be some different priorities in front of him. The thing that you know about Scottie Scheffler, though, is he chases excellence. That's where he's been wired. He said he wore the golf pants to look like the pros when he was 7 years old. Like, he's wired to be great in everything. So, fatherhood. He's going to be great. He's going to find a way to still be great as a golfer as well.
It'll be exciting to see Scottie the rest of the year if he can have this as a springboard to a multi-major season. So who knows what we're going to see from the world number one. For Jordan Cornett, welcome aboard. First show here on Golf
Neil
Today.
Neil Shipley and Butler Cabin hanging out with
I'm George Savarikas. Have a good one.